Hi, this is Pastor Mark Azil, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and LCMSU, inviting all college students and those with an interest in campus ministry to join us for Taboo, the 2015 National LCMS Campus Ministry Conference, this coming January 5th through 7th at St. Louis University in St. Louis. That's right, it's Taboo in the Lou. Find out more at lcms.org/LCMSU.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Friday afternoon, November the 7th. I'm going to be talking with Dr. Jennifer Roback Marsh of the Booth Institute about two recent court rulings on same-sex marriage, one for and the other against, one local and the other seems to have a little more national consequence. Dr. Jennifer Roback Marsh is founding president of the Booth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, let's start local here. In particular, I'd like your reaction to Mark Solomon. He's National Campaign Director for Freedom to Marry, a group obviously that's for what they call marriage equality. And he speaks about the recent ruling in the St. Louis area. He says it's very much consistent with the way judges have been ruling around the country since the Supreme Court took up the issue. There has been incredible momentum. What are your thoughts there?
Well, he's correct in the sense that the Windsor case did give a tremendous amount of momentum to the side of judges redefining marriage. But on the opposite side of that, just yesterday, or very recently, we had the ruling from the Sixth Circuit doing the opposite, you know, saying that the people need to decide this democratically, that a lot of basically dismantling many of the arguments that have been customarily used to defend the redefinition of marriage. And so that case, that Sixth Circuit case, is almost certainly going to throw the whole question back to the Supreme Court.
Now, maybe as a transition between those two, the momentum has been judicial momentum. It hasn't been some sort of grassroots momentum. In fact, the constitutional ban on same-sex marriage in Missouri was 10 years old and was voted on by the people of Missouri. That's what was overturned recently. What kind of momentum are we really talking about here?
Well, really, Todd, this is a momentum of the elites. You know, the elites in our society have decided that we're going to have gay marriage and that this is the march of history. And by golly, they're going to throw all of their power and influence and money onto the side of redefining marriage because they want to and because they think they can. When the people are involved, people of modest means, people of ordinary backgrounds, people who work for a living and who don't have talk shows or seats on judicial benches and so on, ordinary people are still scratching their heads over this and saying, you know, a man and a woman is something quite different from two men, is something quite different from two women. And it's perfectly reasonable for the law to treat them differently, you know. And so this is a case of the elite thrusting something upon the ordinary people, which really the whole sexual revolution has had that character to it, Todd.
Now, is it encouraging to you, taking up the issue of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati that you mentioned before? They had a panel that voted 2-1 that all, and this is, I'm reading from the politics section of, I believe, Reuters. Yes, it's Reuters. It says, although they believed that same-sex marriage across the nation is practically inevitable, in the words of U.S. Circuit Judge Jeffrey Sutton, it should be settled through the democratic process, not the judicial one. Are you encouraged by that?
Well, yes, I'm very encouraged by many of the things that Judge Sutton said, and that's one of them. But as a practical matter, we now have a situation where the Supreme Court is going to have to actually rule on the substance of the question, which is, does the 14th Amendment require genderless marriage? They've never ruled on that question. And one of the things I like about Sutton's opinion is that he talks about the fact that there actually is a federal precedent back in 1970, the Baker case, in which the court said there's no federal issue here. We don't need to talk about redefining marriage. The states are perfectly capable of having regulating marriage, and man-woman marriage is perfectly a reasonable thing to do, and there's no federal issue here. Go away. That precedent, Sutton points out, that precedent was not overturned by the Windsor case. which is a very interesting fact. So by doing this, this particular opinion in the Sixth Circuit is going to force the Supreme Court to stop tap dancing around the issue and to finally come and make some decision on some of the important questions.
What do you make of the fact that, and it's no secret anymore, that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has kind of telegraphed at least her personal desire to see an opportunity to rule on same-sex marriage while she's still sitting on the court, but she kind of told everybody, hey, unless there's disagreement among the lower courts, we can't really take it up. There's no reason for us to take it up. Is she getting what she wants? Will she get what she wants?
I suppose she's getting what she wants. And whether she wants it or not is not really the important question. The important question is that when two circuits disagree, then you certainly have a federal issue and the Supreme Court has to do something about it. So that's, I think, the real significance of this Sixth Circuit case.
Let's just talk about a couple things. Neither of us attorneys, given the makeup of the Supreme Court today, if they had to hear it, are you confident that they wouldn't nationalize in some form same-sex marriage, given their decision in the Windsor case?
I'm not confident of that at all. I think that as you say, we're not attorneys, nor are we fortune tellers, you know. But I'm not confident at all about what they would do. What I like about this Sixth Circuit decision is that it forces certain issues to the forefront. So, for example, he talks about the question of whether this is really a suspect class, whether the homosexuality or sexual orientation can be treated as a protected class. And he notes, the courts haven't defined a new protected class in a long, long time, and they have yet to actually do that. And he goes through different precedents that seem like sexual orientation is being treated as a protected class. But when you look at it more closely, there are other issues involved. So up until now, a lot of these issues have been sidestepped. And, you know, I want to see them say that gays are politically powerless, because that's part of the definition of being a suspect class or protected class, is you have to say they're politically powerless. You have to say it's a trait that's immutable. You know, you have to, and I think that the people on our side who are arguing in the court, who are arguing in the public square, I think this is a very important point for us to be making publicly as much as we can, that this is to make sexual orientation a suspect class or a protected class is a very different kind of thing from any that we've ever had before. I mean, just look at the laundry list of sexual orientations that are now kind of part of public discourse. LGBTQ. What does the Q stand for? The Q stands for questioning. Well, how can questioning be a protected class? How can you have a protected class that has where the boundaries are so fuzzy that you can define yourself in or out of it through your behavior? You know, I don't think people on our side have made enough of that fact that this would be a very difficult legal case to be making. And they need to be pressed on this. If they're going to make this case, we have to make them fight for it. We have to make them work to show that it's really, truly like race. And they haven't been able to do that yet.
On the issue of being kind of politically powerless or having no other political recourse than the courts, can anyone credibly make that argument for sensible judges, given the fact that the progress of same-sex marriage and the campaign for it has been overtly political and has been probably one of the most well-oiled, well-financed political machines in American history?
Yes, and Judge Sutton makes that point. You know, this is simply not credible to say that they're politically powerless. Now, I do remember this issue coming up back in the Prop 8 case, and one of the ways that Judge Walker dealt with that was by dismissing some of the evidence as saying it was not really relevant. So there was an expert witness on our side that basically testified that gays were not politically powerless. And Judge Walker said he doesn't count as an expert because his expertise is just about California politics. His expertise isn't specifically enough about gay and lesbian issues. And so he was able to sidestep that issue. I don't know whether that came up in subsequent hearings or what, but I agree with you. It seems to me to be quite a stretch to say that the gay lobby is politically powerless and only the judiciary can help them. That doesn't seem right to me.
Finally then, Jennifer, why do so many judges, when they rule against same-sex marriage bans, as most, all but one, have, why do they cite the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution?
Well, because that's the case that is being presented to them. That's the argument that's being presented to them, that equal protection and due process are being denied. And so what Judge Sutton is saying is that the U.S. Supreme Court has not said that, that the 14th Amendment applies to this case. And that's, I think, what the issue is going to be if and when this is appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court next year or whenever it might be.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. You can find out more about the Ruth Institute under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Jennifer, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
Speaking of the 14th Amendment, by the way, that's something we need to delve in a little more deeply. We'll be talking about that Tuesday on Issues Etc. with constitutional law professor Tad Armstrong. That's Tuesday next week. We'll take up the subject of the 14th Amendment. When we come back, we're going to spend some time. Well, the subject is going to turn to history, back to the 16th century, the late 16th century, and a Martin, not Martin Luther, but a Lutheran reformer nonetheless, Martin Chemnitz. Dr. George Williams will join us as we remember on this day, 16th century Lutheran theologian and reformer, and author of a very significant part of, or co-author of a very significant part of the Lutheran Confessions, Martin Chemnitz.
Ernst Heating and Cooling is a third-generation, family-owned company and has been serving the Metro East for decades. Ernst is a Lennox and GeoComfort geothermal dealer and services all makes and models of heating and cooling systems. Now is the time for your heating system checkup. Whether it's service or maintenance for your existing heating or cooling system or a whole new system, you need to call Ernst Heating and Cooling. Call them at 618-633-2244 or ErnstHeating.com. Ernst Heating and Cooling, Hamel, Illinois.
Coming Friday, November 14th, and Saturday, November 15th, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. from 10 in the morning Central Time on November 14th through 10 in the morning Central Time on November 15th. This year's theme, Myths About Lutheranism. Issues Etc. 24, Friday, November 14th, and Saturday, November 15th. Listen live at issuesetc.org.
Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. The 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Clear, concise, consistent. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen on Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org and click Listen on Demand.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.